So, those of you that came for the morning class, and for the speaker of Mangalarti, thank you, thank you, thank you. Very nice idea. Very astonished and pleasantly surprised to see so many smiling faces and dancing feet at Mangalarti this morning. And then Guru Puja and morning class. So, this morning we spoke some verses, or some summarizing up to Lord Vamana's appearance, the actual appearance, and giving for this evening his Leela. Because after all, Janma Karma Shame Divyam, or his Leela, is fully transcendental. So just hearing the wonderful pastimes of the personality of Godhead, as well as the transcendental nature of his appearance. Very purifying. And a little review, starting with our first picture here. This is a DVT painting of Lord Indra seeing the humongous army of Bali Maharaj heading into the palace and the kingdom of Indra. This was the result, we attended class this morning, this was the result of an offense. The offense of offending Durvasa Muni. Indra received a garland while they were passing. Durvasa Muni gave in respect. Brahmanas give respect to Kshatriyas, and Kshatriyas certainly give respect to Brahmanas, but Durvasa Muni was very respectful and offered his garland. Elephant with his trunk, threw it on the ground and tromped on it. I mean, not in disrespect, but not understanding its meaning. And Durvasa could understand the pride of Indra and cursed him. He would lose all of his opulence, he would lose his position, he would lose everything. That which was making him proud would be taken from him. And Bali came to take it from him. A number of other things followed after Indra and the demigods lost the entire heavenly planets. They went to Brahma for a solution to their problem. Brahma went to the shore of the milk ocean, where the Lord has his white island in the midst of a milk ocean, offered prayers, and Lord Vishnu gave the solution. He promised that he would appear. So after Indra lost his kingdom to Bali Maharaj, the mother of Indra, Aditi, was filled with grief that her son and other demigod sons had lost their residence, had lost her kingdom, had lost everything. So she was in great distress. Mothers get in distress sometimes. And her husband, Kasyapa, was on a little vacation. He was on a samadhi vacation. For many, many years he was absorbed in samadhi. And when he came back, he saw his ashram looked forlorn, and his wife, Aditi, looked terribly distressed, and inquired, and she explained the cause of the distress, and he gave a solution. He suggested that Lord Vishnu can address this, and no one else, because offending a Brahmana is a very serious matter. Lord Vishnu can, if he is pleased, he can bring a solution. And he gave her this Payavrata procedure, 12-day, very severe, very strict procedure, and explained to her in detail how to do it. She was very qualified. She followed exactly according to her husband's instruction. And then on the end of the 12th day, personality God had appeared before Aditi, as you see pictured here. And the description in the Bhagavatam is that she immediately prostrated herself before Lord Vishnu and then stood up with folded palms and wished to speak, but she was speechless. She was just stunned for a long time, seeing the beautiful form of Lord Vishnu. And finally she gathered her ability to speak and offered some very beautiful prayers. Of course, Lord Vishnu understood exactly her intention, and he made a statement or a pronouncement or a promise to her that he would appear as her son. And as an incarnation, or in that manner, he would then correct the situation. And then, as mystically as he appeared, he disappeared. And then the Bhagavatam describes, immediately thereafter, Kashyapa experienced the sensation or realization that a subjective portion of the Lord Himself entered into His body. And he then understood the intention of the Lord, because he was a great devotee. And in due course of time, the form of the Lord was transferred to Aditi, and in due course of time, a form of the Lord appeared as Lord Vishnu. We read this morning the description of that beautiful form, and the final verse that we read was that form of Lord Vishnu then changed his form, or by his own divine potency he manifested a tiny human-like form as a Brahmin boy. So he fulfilled his promise to Aditi to become their son. And there was a question this morning, how much time passed before he met with Bali? So I reread the section and it doesn't say. But it does say that at the due time, so Upanayana for a Brahmin boy takes place, what, when he's 12? Yes?
10? 7? 7? 8?
So 7 after birth. Okay. Well, there was a big festival when he received his thread and other items. Lord Indra gave the umbrella, and Aditi gave his kopins, and someone gave him his walking stick, and someone gave his kamandalu, and someone gave him his little cute Brahmin dress, and his beads, and all the different things. Different demigods all gave him these items. And his father gave him his mantra. And he conducted the activities of a small boy, although he's the personality of God. In other words, like Krishna, he fulfilled the parental and other affections of those with whom he was associating. And after some time, still a small boy, he heard, of course he's omniscient, but he heard that Bali Maharaj, one of the purposes of his appearance was to regain the kingdom from Bali Maharaj. So he did so in a very unique way. Here's some artwork of Vamana, different depictions, carrying his umbrella and his kamandalu. This is the pose with his umbrella and so forth is the common pose by which one can understand, oh, this is Vamana carrying a stick in one hand, an umbrella in the other hand. There's Kamandalu in one hand and an umbrella in the other hand. He looks very jolly. Some wood carvings. Here he's taking his 3 paces of land from Bali. So he came upon the place is named, where under the supervision of Sukracharya, a yagya was about to begin. And as the early morning, as the yagya was about to begin, Vamana came. And it's described, it was like the rising of a second sun, although the sun has already risen, just risen. He was effulgent like the sun, and everyone was astonished. The brahmanas in the assembly were looking at each other and discussing with each other, what is this, and who is this, and of course not just the Bhagavad Purana, but other Puranas describe this pastime, the appearance of Lord Vamana. As soon as Bali, from a distance, saw Lord Vamana, he couldn't detect exactly what or who, but his heart became filled with joy. And he stood, and his feeling from his heart was, I want to make a... This is very auspicious. Whoever this is, whatever this is, very auspicious, because when ceremonies are performed and saintly persons come, brahmanas come and saintly persons come, it makes it more auspicious. It's one of the reasons, besides social reasons, spiritual reasons, why we like to have saintly people come and attend our functions. Like we have a something or other festival and we like for some persons to come. It creates an atmosphere of auspiciousness. It's just like at the passing of Maharaj Parikshit, he wanted all the saintly persons to come. By their coming, the saintly atmosphere is created, creating auspiciousness. So because he's about to perform a yagya, by the presence of this dwarf brahmana, immediately it meant great success, blessings and benedictions upon the sacrifice. And he thought within his mind, I want to give him charity, because he's a king, who is the emperor at this time, ruling the world, excuse me, ruling the universe. Very powerful and certainly could give him charity. And so he welcomed him. And here's one painting where he's offering sacred water for washing the hands and feet of Bali. Here is another very nice illustration of the saint. Sanctifying in the presence of Bali Maharaj and Vamana. Now this is not a sacrificial field, but this is how the artist depicted, he's again bringing forward this pot for washing, for sanctifying. This is Shukracharya. These are the other brahmanas looking at each other, wondering, who is this? And Shukracharya understood, this is Bali the king, this is Shukracharya, and the assistance of Shukracharya. This is a good close-up. You can see the differences of Tilak here. Shukracharya. Well, let me describe, just read what the Bhagavatam reads of how Bali appeared as he walked into the sacrificial arena. While the priests of the Bhrigu dynasty and their disciples talked and argued in various ways, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamanadeva, holding in his hands the rod, the umbrella, and a water pot full of water, entered the arena of the Ashvamedha sacrifice, appearing as a Brahmana boy wearing a belt of straw, a sacred thread, an upper garment of deerskin, and matted locks of hair. Lord Vamanadeva entered the arena of sacrifice. His brilliant effulgence diminished the brilliance of all the priests and their disciples, who thus stood from their seats and welcomed the Lord properly by offering obeisances. So, the initial exchange, conversation-wise, is Bali Maharaj offers words of praise. Said, "You know, by your effulgence and by your extremely attractive features, one can understand you're not an ordinary personality, and I wish to give you, in charity, whatever it is that you would like. Would you like a kingdom? Would you like riches? Would you like whatever you would like?" And Vamana replies by saying, your charitable disposition is perfectly suited to your family line. Your grandfather was Prahlad Maharaj, and as a great personality in favor of the personality of God, and certainly respected for integral culture, and on, just like appreciating the offer and the gesture. But Shukracharya didn't, as you can see from the expression on his face. And I wanted to read what he says. Shukracharya said, "O son of Virochana," so Virochana was the son of Prahlad, and Bali is the son of Virochana, so two generations after Prahlad. "This Brahmacharya, in the form of a dwarf, is directly the imperishable Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Accepting Kashyapa Muni as his father and Aditi as his mother, he has now appeared in order to fulfill the interests of the demigods." You know, those people you just took the kingdom from. "This person," so he starts accusing him, "appearing as a brahmachari is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who has come in this form to take away all your land, wealth, beauty, power, fame, and education. After taking everything from you, he will deliver to Indra, your enemy. You have promised to give him 3 steps of land and charity." So I skipped part of it. He said, you know, take whatever you want. I said, no. I'm sure I don't care. Well, take what you like. You can give 3 paces of land. Look at your legs. 3 paces of land. Take a kingdom. Take a country. Take a continent. 3 paces of land. All right. She faces away. So be it, I promise. So Shukracharya is going to give him a way to lie his way out of his promise. This is some kind of promise that teaches you how to lie. But listen to the trick. It's really clever. You have promised to give him 3 steps of land in charity, but when you give it, he will occupy the 3 worlds. You are a rascal. You do not know what a great mistake you have made. You know, kings don't give their word and break the word, but you know, you made a big mistake. Giving everything to Lord Vishnu, you'll have no means of livelihood. How then shall you live? Vamana will first occupy the 3 worlds with 1 step, then he'll take the 2nd step and occupy everything in outer space, and then will he expand his universal body, occupy everything. Where will you offer the 3rd step? You will certainly be unable to fulfill your promise. And I think that because of this inability, your eternal residence will be in hell. So everything he said is right on. Learned scholars do not praise that charity which endangers one's own livelihood. Charity, sacrifice, austerity, and fruitive activities are possible for one who is competent to earn his livelihood properly. Therefore, one who is in full knowledge should divide his accumulated wealth in 5 parts: religion, reputation, opulence, sense gratification, and the maintenance of his family members. Such a person is happy in the world and the next. He's giving him, you know, the scriptural injunctions that he just transgressed. One might argue that since you have already promised, how can you refuse, O best of the demons? Just take from me the evidence of the Bhavricha Shruti, which says, here's the trick, that a promise is truthful preceded by the word Om, and untruthful if not. You didn't say Om, so you don't have to do it. The Vedas enjoin that the factual result of the tree of the body is the good fruits and flowers derived from it. But if the bodily tree does not exist, there's no possibility of factual fruits and flowers. Even if the body is based on untruth, there cannot be factual fruits and flowers without the help of the bodily tree. So it's like, it's another word juggler. You won't be able to maintain your body, and so that body with which you have made the promise, it doesn't exist. So it doesn't count. When a tree is uprooted, it immediately falls down and begins to dry up. Similarly, if one doesn't take care of the body, which is supposed to be untruth, in other words, if the untruth is uprooted, the body would undoubtedly become dry. The utterance of the word Om signifies separation from one's monetary assets. Anyway, the basic idea is he's saying, because you didn't say Om, you don't have to do it. Therefore, the safe course is to say no. Although it is a falsehood, it protects one completely. It draws the compassion of others towards oneself, and it gives one full facility to collect money from others for oneself. This is the Brahmana that guides the demons. Nonetheless, if one always pleads that he has nothing, he is condemned, for he is a dead body while living, or while still breathing, he should be killed. Then he gives another kind of logic, which says, if you don't have any wealth, you won't be able to perform sacrifices, because part of sacrifices is you require articles for sacrifice, and you also require to give alms to the brahmana who performs that sacrifice. That's me, by the way. And you won't be able to give me any dakshin, so you know, I won't do any yajnas for you. You won't have the paraphernalia to do the yajnas, and then you'll be destitute. So you can't do this. So just say, I didn't say om, so it doesn't count. And basically the reply from Bali is, well, a disciple is supposed to follow the instructions of the spiritual master, but the spiritual master is supposed to follow the injunctions of the scripture. And the scripture says that one should give everything to Vishnu. And you're saying he's Vishnu, but don't give everything to Vishnu. So I can't follow that instruction. And I have to say no to you. You say I should say no to him. I'm saying no to you. And not accepting this instruction from you. And Shukracharya became angry. So it may look like how Durvas Muni became angry at Lord Indra, but it's not the same, because Lord Indra offended, frankly offended Durvas Muni by pride, and Bali was simply abiding by the injunction of scripture and followed the principle that he should offer everything to Vishnu. If he's Vishnu, I want to give everything to him. If he's a Brahmana, I want to give him whatever he wants. And I've given my word, and I can take my word back. So the dwarf Brahmana started to expand his body, his body. And just as Shukracharya had said, with his first step, he covered the three worlds. He had a big step. And then his body continued to expand and extend. With his hands, he covered all directions. With his second footstep, he covered the entire upper planetary system. Therefore, there was no vacant place where he could take his third footstep. So he then challenged, Bali, you've given your promise that I could take three paces of land. But where is that third place? That third step, where's my third step to go? And he was pointing to his head. You can place that third step right here on my head. This is Alnarnath. If you have been to Jagannath Puri, some of you came on pilgrimage to Jagannath Puri, and the place where Lord Chaitanya would go after Snanyatra, Lord Jagannath and Lord Jagannath went into seclusion with feelings of separation from Lord Jagannath, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to this temple. This is not the main deity there, but it's a deity in Alnarnath. And so there's transcendental significance or connection between the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and this place for sure. So this is Trivikra, or the Lord Vamana taking his second step, because there's the abode of Lord Brahma. That's the uppermost part of this universe, and his foot went even beyond the abode of Lord Brahma, pierced a hole in the coverings of the universe. So the water of the Garbhodak ocean came down. There's the dwarf Ramana and his mother and father, although he's much smaller than they are. So Ramana placed his foot on the head of Bali. Very nice painting, isn't it? And there's other paintings similarly, because here it's showing he's very, very large body. One foot on the earth covering the three worlds, another covering outer space, and the third one touching the head of the body.
So after placing his foot on the head of Bali, after taking everything away from him, of course, by touching his foot on Bali's head, he sanctified his head as he became blessed. It's something like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kicking Shivananda Singh in the chest. He was ecstatic. And his wife was so upset. He kicked you in the chest. He kicked me in the chest. And following that, so Vamana then began to chastise him and said, you know, you're irreligious. What kind of king are you? You can't keep your word. You promised me 3 paces of land and you didn't give me 3 paces of land. You violated Dharma. And so you should be severely punished. He had him arrested after he surrendered everything and had him tied with ropes like a common criminal. Although he was moments before, he was in charge of the whole universe. He was greater than the King of Heaven. And in a few moments, everything's taken away from him and he's being bound like this with like a common criminal. And so there's a big commotion that takes place. There's like ages of different personalities that come to make comment. You know, they're evaluating whether this was the right thing to do or they're not the right thing to do. And some say, oh, this is terrible. It shouldn't be punished. And his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, came and said, oh, this is very good. He's getting special mercy to be dealt with in this way. Then after all the commotion, Vamanadeva speaks. And it's a really nice verse. And he says essentially, just see, I've made this arrangement to show the virtue of Bali Maharaj. Because what ordinary person could withstand indeed what he has been subjected to? Everything was taken from him. He was cursed by his spiritual master, bound like a common criminal, treated in all kinds of bad ways, and he never deviated. His mind didn't deviate. He stood by his word because he gave his word. He kept his word, and when his word was somehow not being able to be violated, he then submitted to this treatment without any protest. Just see the quality. I did this to show the quality of Bali. And there's a very nice purport wherein Prabhupada says that sometimes the Supreme Lord puts a devotee through some difficult circumstance. Sometimes it's more than sometimes. Puts the devotee through some difficult circumstance. But that very same Supreme Lord who puts the devotee through some difficult circumstance also gives sufficient strength to the devotee to deal with the circumstance. This is the characteristic of one who is truly faithful. Krishna will help, Krishna will examine, and Krishna will give the strength. And one who doesn't deviate from the Supreme Lord can succeed in the test and come on the other side fully purified. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur calls this the fire of ordeal. We're discussing it recently, maybe just this morning, somewhere. For those who aren't devotees, they receive their due karma that the scriptures teach, Sri Brahma Samhita teaches. It's one of the features of Samoham Sarva Bhusheshu Namedvesho Stinapriya. In the language of the Sri Brahma Samhita, from Indra down to the Indra Gopa Germ, everyone is receiving what they are, according to their position, what they are deserving, guna and karma. And then next, Brahma says, however, there's special dispensation that goes to the devotee. And the devotee is relieved of their past karma. And Bhaktisiddhanta says, yes, they're relieved of their past karma, sometimes by the fire of ordeal. And Jiva Goswami refers to this in his commentary. Just as gold is purified by fire, and as sugar cane is purified by fire, so a devotee is sometimes purified by the fire of ordeal. And so when there's an ordeal, as happened with Bali Maharaj, he achieved perfection of the nine processes of bhakti. One of the ninth one in that list is surrendering everything, atmanivedana. And Bali exemplifies that, atmanivedana. So it's not like he went through the ordeal whining and complaining, this isn't fair. Why is this happening to me? I'm a devotee. I'm a good person. I did what I was supposed to do. And why is this happening? He didn't do that. He, without protest, without even in his mind, without any consideration of what was happening, he understood this is Lord Vishnu, and Vishnu wishes for this to happen this way. I mean, after all, what happened? His body became so big. With one step, he covered up to the heavenly planets. Another step, it went through above Brahmaloka. This is Lord Vishnu. And the third step went on his head. He can do whatever he wants. Bind me, no problem. But the punishment was for not keeping his promise. And so, Bali was honored. He said that the kingdom, as Shukracharya said, will go back to Indra. You've given it to me? Indra's my brother. He was also the son of Kashyapa and Aditi. I'm giving the kingdom back to him. I'll give you another kingdom, in the kingdom of Sutala. And you're so dear to me, you know what? I'll go there with you. And not only there, I'll go there with you, but I'll be the guard at the gate of your kingdom. And he kept his word, because the Lord keeps his word. And there's this description, some of you may be familiar, in Ramayana, where Ravana wanted to conquer the three worlds, upper, middle, and lower, those three worlds, not like Bhuvar and Swargaloka, but the hellish planets and intermediate planets and the heavenly planets. So he went, he knew, because he's a powerful demon, he knew that there's a powerful king in Sutala. So he wanted to gain entrance into Sutala. But Vamana was standing at the gate. And, of course, there's different depictions of what happened. But he was not allowed. Vamana, a little dwarf, looking up at Ravana, and you can't enter. And he wanted to, move him aside, bit squeak. And so, with the same foot that he used to cover the three worlds, he used the same foot with just his toe and booted him 10,000 yojanas. Ravana didn't come back. So he didn't conquer the three worlds. But some commentators say that because Ravana was touched by the toe of Vamana, that made him eligible to receive the arrow of Ram and be delivered. So his activities are as transcendental as his appearance. I'm the Supreme Personality, like Krishna wanted to honor Arjuna. Krishna showed Arjuna, and he even told him, the outcome of this battle is already decided. They're already destroyed. Like, you know, time is separating. But so, I wish you to be the instrument. I wish you to be honored. You take the service. And this, and because it will not be you, it'll be, you'll be the instrument for my plan. Krishna likes to honor his devotee. And another really nice example I really like is Muchakunda. Krishna wanted to honor Muchakunda so that thousands and thousands of years later, Muchakunda would be remembered for the one who killed Kalyavan, although Krishna could easily have killed Kalyavan without any effort. But he wanted to give the credit to Muchakunda. And similarly, the Supreme Lord wanted to honor Bali. Another nice example is Krishna wanted Bhishma Dev to pacify Yudhisthira. So even Krishna couldn't pacify Yudhisthira, but Bhishma Dev could pacify Yudhisthira. Because Krishna wanted to honor Bhishma Dev. But Krishna likes to do that with his devotee. So Krishna wanted to honor Bali. At the same time, restore the kingdom to Indra. And in effect, properly honor, because the mistake was dishonoring Durvas Muni, to properly honor qualified personalities. So Indra learned a lesson, Indra regained the kingdom. Kashyapa and Aditi were satisfied the personality of God and became their son, which from their previous life of Sutapa and Prishni was being fulfilled in that life as Vamana. So many things were being accomplished. But honoring Bali was one, although it looks like dishonor. It was honoring Bali. He spoke the words that clarified what he was wishing to do. One of the most important lessons for me is that it would take time to look up the exact purport, but how Prabhupada describes this. For purification, devotees may sometimes be put into difficulty, and the faithful devotee is given the strength to overcome the difficulty or pass over the difficulty. When one has faith in Krishna, the strength to pass over that difficulty and come out on the other side purified. This is part of the reciprocation of the Supreme Lord. Fantastic example of that is what Lord Chaitanya did with Sanatana Goswami in his wedages. He put him in that situation and brought him to the point of complete, no other shelter but the Supreme Lord, and then he took the problem away. It was such a problem, he was ready to give up his life, he was ready to leave Lord Chaitanya's association, something unthinkable, but ready to leave because of his humility and so forth. And then the problem went away. The fire of ordeal. Take your ordeal. One might say, oh, I don't know if I want to fire up a deal, thank you. Maybe I'll just, you know, leave Krishna to the side and take my chances. And then you get another ordeal. The ordeal of birth, death, disease, and old age, again and again and again. And with it, all of the other ordeals that come with the package. If we want, not just, I don't want any more ordeals, I'll take the big one first and then I'll have no more ordeals. That's not even what the program is. It's shelter Krishna. And the difficulty is because of our attachment, not anything else. There's a Jiva Goswami. We're going to be discussing a little bit about Jiva Goswami because this is the appearance day or disappearance day? Appearance day of Jiva Goswami. So Jiva Goswami in his Priti Sandarbha, Priti means affection and love. It's, you know, like prema. So there's a section in Priti Sandarbha where Jiva Goswami discusses the stages of prema. It's like, you know, there's like prema, or simple prema, whatever that is. And then higher, more intense, more elevated stages of prema, up to the stage of Srimati Radharani's Mahabhava, which living entities cannot ever know anyway. But it's like seven stages, and one of them is called raga, and raga means attachment. But when there's attachment and love, the example that he gives from scripture is Queen Kunti's prayer. You know that famous one, where she prays for calamities again and again. And it's not like she's a mad woman or a masochist or something. It's raga. It's, according to Jiva Goswami, it's attachment and love. Now, several ways of looking at it. One way, kind of a simple way, is her experience is when there's a calamity, and they had lots of calamities, their intensified feelings of love would become even more intense, and they would call out to Krishna, and Krishna would come. And two outstanding examples of this was Draupadi's being disrobed and Durvasmudi coming with on 60,000 followers to be fed in Draupadi's magic pot. You know, she couldn't use it anymore to feed, because it was given to feed so many guests. But Krishna came and instructed Draupadi when she was just in such distress, what to do, we don't want to offend. Not just like we don't want the reaction from Durvasmudi, we don't want to offend Durvasmudi. So Krishna told her the solution. Krishna personally comes, and in you know, the Kurukshetra battle, Krishna personally came. Again and again, Krishna would come. The calamity was there, reigned by Krishna, Krishna would come. So now, at the end, when it looks like calamities are over, the source of those calamities, the whole Kuru dynasty was devastated. And the kingdom is there, the whole emperor of the whole world. And no opposition. Completely gone. So Krishna's leaving. So she's pleading with him, please don't leave. And if what keeps you here is calamity, then let the calamities come, because then we'll see you. Darshana. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, maybe some of you have read that or remember that, there's a section where Narada Muni, it's part one, Narada Muni searching, he's on a quest for who is the greatest recipient of the mercy of Krishna. And he hears from Prahlad Maharaj that the Pandavas, because Prahlad's activity is perfection through remembrance. He said, the Pandavas, they're far more elevated. They're not remembering Krishna all the time. They're with Krishna all the time. They're serving him intimately as his dearmost friend. I just remember. They serve in remembrance. Narada is very enthusiastic to go associate with the Pandavas and express his appreciation for their how much they're the recipient of Krishna's mercy. And when he gets to Hastinapur, he's very surprised. They're all sitting around planning the next calamity. The Pandava conference, the calamity planning conference. But the explanation given by Jiva Goswami in Priti Sandarbha is the nature of raga, it's an intensification of dasya, those of you that have read Nectar Devotion. The example of dasya is given within the life of Pradyumna, who is the son of Krishna. And dasya is, if Krishna wanted something and Pradyumna didn't want that something, he would do that something because Krishna wanted, and then vice versa. If Pradyumna wanted something but Krishna didn't want, then Pradyumna would forego it because his mood was, as the son, was to serve his father, or as, you know, it was the mood of dasya. And raga is an intensification. Not only one will forego if something is wanted but the Lord doesn't want, it's no problem. One doesn't even recognize there's no problem because of the ecstasy of attachment to the interest of the Supreme Lord. And then vice versa. It's, you know, the prominent, the shining, outstanding, pervasive mood is ecstatic love, whatever the Lord wants. My inconvenience doesn't mean anything. One doesn't even notice it. So calamities, no problem. Association with the Supreme Lord, that's everything. Very high level. So we, obviously we don't even try to imitate such a thing. We don't pray for calamities. But we can pray for the intensification of our quality of love for the Supreme Lord. And so a little bit about the life of Jiva Goswami. He had such quality even when he was a small boy. He had intense attachment for the Supreme Lord. Three outstanding qualities. One is, when he was young, his father was the brother of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. So one can only imagine Rupa and Sanatan Goswami's brother's son. We don't hear anything about their children, but just Anupam, the third brother, had as a child Jiva. And from childhood, he was given deities of Krishna Balaram. And he was with his deities, Krishna Balaram, day and night, and night, and day and night. And he could not be separated from them. You know, like today, it's an electronic gizmo where they play games or something. It can't be separated. Or something like that. Maybe a puppy dog, or maybe a friend, or maybe a ball, or maybe something. It was Krishna Balaram. He was attached, transcendentally attached. And, you know, he would talk to them and play with them, and it was everything with them. And because he was, his father was gone, but all of his family members were deeply attached to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So he would hear about them. So this is the second characteristic. He was deeply attached, although he had, well, the biographies about his life don't say Some say when Krishna, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Ramakeli and met Sanatana Rupa Goswami, he was a little baby. And so as a little baby he had Lord Chaitanya's association, but others don't say it's not certain. In any case, he heard about Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and he wanted very, very, very much. This is described in Bhakti Ratnakar. Once in a dream, he saw his deities of Krishna Balaram, and he saw the deities of Krishna Balaram transform themselves into Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. And they were dancing. And then the two lords, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, came before Jiva Goswami and touched their feet and placed the dust from the feet upon his head in his dream. And then he woke. And he wasn't the same the next morning. He was mad for the association of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. But before he was old enough to travel and go and see them, they left this world. Lord Chaitanya, left. So he was being encouraged because his mood of intense anchoring was so strong that the teachers, this is the third quality, he was super scholar. I mean, they ran out of stuff to teach him because he would just learn everything so quickly and so brilliant. So they predicted, you'll become an amazing personality as an adult, scholarship wise. So at their encouragement, he and with his mother's permission, he took a journey to Navadvip. Very famous. When he got to, his purpose in going to Navadvip was just to see the place where Lord Chaitanya had appeared and performed the first half of his life's pastimes. And when he got there, just on the precincts of Navadvip, Lord Nityananda was there to greet him and addressed him by name. They said, you're the nephew of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. I've come to meet you. And Jiva Goswami he hadn't met Lord Chaitanya, but now he was meeting Lord Nityananda. And so, it was love at first sight. He was in ecstasy. And Lord Nityananda embraced him, and his whole body became filled with further ecstasy. And the details of that encounter are found in Navadvip Dham Mahatmya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Lord Nityananda took Jiva Goswami, young man, to all the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes and described those places of pastimes. And in ecstasy, they would have kirtan, and sometimes some of those places, Lord Chaitanya appeared, transcendentally appeared, and then they became totally ecstatic. And the associates of Lord Chaitanya came in their transcendental forms, and they had ecstatic kirtan, and then went to the next place, and it was just an incredible experience. And then Lord Nityananda, as Lord Nityananda had done with Krishnadas Kaviraj, he granted him residence in Vrindavan. But before going to Vrindavan, he gave him another instruction, and that is, he should go and receive scriptural training from a particular Brahmin whose name I can't remember. Let me see if it's here. An associate of Lord Chaitanya, who Lord Chaitanya had sent to Benares. I forget. Anyway, Madhusudana Vachaspati, there we go. Madhusudana Vachaspati was living in Benares, which is, by the way, headquarters of Mayavada doctrine, to go and study the six darshans, the atheistic interpretations of the Vedas from a Vaishnava, so that he would know backwards and forwards. Whenever later he would write, he would know what those would persons who oppose Vaishnava doctrine would say, and on what authority from the Vedas they would draw, and what the refutation of that was, before he went to Vrindavan. And then he went to Vrindavan. And he took the association of Rupa and Sanatana, his uncles. So he was young amongst the six Goswamis. He and Raghunath Das were young amongst them. And in course of time, as Rupa and Sanatana left this world, he then became the next in line of succession amongst the followers of Lord Chaitanya. He resided for the rest of his life in Vrindavan, and his main contributions were many, but writing. He wrote 25 books and 400,000 verses of intense, rigorous Sanskrit. He accepted as three disciples, the three neck personalities were in line after him. He trained them A to Z in the teachings of the Goswamis. He, among his most elevated works are the Sandarbhas, the topic by topic presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Brilliant exposition. And another contribution was he had the presence to gather the library. He was engaging brahmanas in writing, because they didn't have printing presses, making copies of the Goswami literature. Age-wise, a contemporary of him was Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He was there when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was writing Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jiva Goswami kept some residence primarily in Vrindavan, but secondarily also in Radhakund. There's a temple of Radha Damodar there also in Radhakund. But so another contribution was his worship of the Radha Damodar deity. And the location of that temple was given by Rupa Goswami, and the deity of Radha Damodar was hand-carved by Rupa Goswami, not like a murti maker, but Rupa Goswami carved the deity with his own hand for Jiva Goswami to worship. And as he did when he was a little boy, he worshipped, he's not so much known for this, he's known for his writing, but he intimately associated with Radha Damodar or Damodar. And it's said that sometimes he would sing and Damodar would dance. And sometimes Damodar would play his flute and he would dance. The intimacy of exchange with this deity was another platform. And I remember very clearly the first time we went to Vrindavan. I went to Vrindavan, it was 1974, and it was just after Prabhupada had taken, that first wave of Western disciples to Vrindavan. So what it looks like today at the Radha Damodar Temple, very different than what it looked like then. And if you've been there, as you go into the compound, there's the altar, and over on the right there's Prabhupada's rooms, and over on the left there's so many samadhis. And if you do the samadhi parikrama, go behind, it used to be that it would go down kind of like there was a stone platform, but you couldn't walk on. Now you walk on the stone platform, but there was something underneath, because in Vrindavan it gets very hot in the summer, and so at least this is what Guru Das told us that Prabhupada had said, that the Goswamis would regularly go there because it was central. Gopalpata was over here, and Rupa Goswami was over there, and Sanatana Goswami was over there, and he was over here, so he was in the middle. So they would come to the Radhadamodar temple and discuss Krishna Katha together in that cool place in the heat of the summer. They didn't have these things, so they had those things. And as you know, in the courtyard of the Radhadamodar temple, that's where Rupa Goswami chose as his samadhi, because it's one of his primary bhajan kuchar places. So, very, very special place. Very, very, Prabhupada said, the most sacred place in the universe. Anyway, from out the window, you could see the samadhi. And Bhajan Kutir Rupa Goswami over out that window, see the deity of Radha Damodar and the samadhis of so many great personalities over there on that side. It was just a very, very special place. Deva Goswami was the hub. And, you know, the standard of deity worship that he maintained, it became the place where you see on the altar, there's so many deities and so many deities and so many deities. Because it was the standard of deity worship was so high. Despite the fact that, you know, Gopalbhatta Goswami, not so far away, you know, the standard of worship was also very high. Anyway, just Jiva Goswami's contribution was superlative. And he had the presence, the first in the followers of Lord Chaitanya, to begin the distribution of literature, which is, you know, in our family line, our Gaudiya family line, distributing transcendental literature, was begun by Jiva Goswami. He had the vision. Lord Chaitanya gave his teachings. He instructed others to write. He also wrote and taught and made copies and created libraries and created a traveling Sankirtan party. He carried on because you've heard this before. After the departure of a great personality, history shows that things collapse because the great personality lifts things up. But after they're gone, collapses quickly. By Rupa and Sanatan, and of course many others, it didn't. But then the next generation was very, very, very critical what he did, just to preserve the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and the good standing of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. He carried it on, and he taught others to carry it on. Not only he did it himself, he taught others to carry it on, and they carried it on in a grand way. And, you know, we don't hear so much of after that. I mean, there's a gap. Things went down after that. Because Srinivasacharya and the others, they went to other places outside of Vrindavan. So Vrindavan was like the seat. And even in Puri, it went down. We know that. The deity of Sarvabhavatacharya, there was no one to properly worship. That's like, you know, very shortly after, because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was elderly. And after Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's departure, it wasn't proper pujari to worship his deity. I mean, it's really important. I mean, I get a little excited on this point because we're in a critical position after the departure of the founder, Acharya Viscon, also to ensure the well-being of that which Prabhupada created. As we know, it didn't continue following Bhakti Siddhanta for reasons we all know. And to carry it forward. It's very important to carry it forward, because the gift for the world is so great. But that the standard of following has to be proper. And it's not just like strict rules and regulations, it's spiritual qualification. Those of you that didn't attend the retreat in Gitanagar, please listen to those recordings. Especially Ravindra Swarup Prabhu's, the words that he spoke were very important and very profound and on this point that I'm just discussing, and what it takes to be a disciple, because our topic was Guru Tattva, exploring Guru Tattva. So he focused on Prabhupada and how Prabhupada was such a follower of Bhakti Siddhanta, the spirit and the letter and everything. And that has to be carried forward. So his disciples and your generation, similarly. And he repeated several times that Prabhupada said, I haven't done something great, except I've just not deviated from the word of my spiritual master. And that's the greatness. Because an ordinary person deviates. You know, they have some other agenda or whatever. So Jiva Goswami carried that forward in a grand way. He was gifted, we hear in his biography, with bhakti +++ and scholarship +++. So we don't have the +++, but we have something and something. Some devotion and some capacity to receive. And then whatever that capacity is to receive, and then in a humble mood, acharya-like, meaning not imitating but by example, pass that on. Whatever it is that you receive, you pass that on. And what happens is that something grows, and your capacity to receive grows. And that's how it works. The creeper of bhakti grows. And by associating with the lives, like we're doing right now, the lives of such great acharya as Jiva Goswami, just by hearing about them and reading their writings, a fair amount of what I presented in Gitanagari was just references to Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta, and Srila Prabhupada speaking on certain points, you know, from this angle, that angle, the other angle, how our great acharyas have looked at a particular point, and it's very illuminating. Jiva Goswami did that from what he heard from Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And you know, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Because he was hearing, as Raghunath Das was hearing, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya that Raghunath Das was sharing to Krishna Das, who was hearing. So he was also receiving and then expressing in his own way, as Krishna Das expressed in his own way. So we will have our own personal mode of expression, which is perfectly fine. It's perfectly natural. It's otherwise would be unnatural. It's perfectly natural. But these personalities, and certainly then in turn others assisting them. But it's not a singular thing. It takes many hands, many people to do tasks. This, I'll end with this because it's the point that was discussed during a conversation this afternoon. When when Srila Prabhupada was called upon at the memorial service of Mahatma Gandhi to make a speech, because when Prabhupada was young, in college, he was a prominent follower of Mahatma Gandhi. So at his memorial service, he was requested to give some talk. So he did so in a traditional way. He wrote a little paper. So, you know, those of you that do academic things, you know, you deliver a paper, and then there's something. You give a little verbal presentation that's like a little piece of the paper. And the paper speaks about how to, you know, in ways in which Mahatma Gandhi was worthy of being praised. And then Prabhupada wrote that the best way to honor a great person, Mahatma Gandhi or whoever, the best way to honor a great person is not just to build a building and name the building after them, or make a statue of the person and they put that statue in some public place. But the way to honor a great person is to create a community of people that exemplify the values held by that great person. That's how to honor a great person. And then Prabhupada went on to say, Mahatma Gandhi valued Bhagavad Gita. So the way to honor Mahatma Gandhi is to create a community of people that exemplify the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. And so then he spoke about a place, or he wrote about a place called Gita Nagari. And that was how many years ago? Before there was, you know, Gita Nagari Dham. It was just Gita Nagari. And he described what would be the elements of such a place of Gita, called Gita Nagari. And then when the Port Royal farm was purchased, it was known as the New York farm, because it was bought with money from New York. Why they went all the way to mid-Pennsylvania to buy a farm, Krishna knows, but because it was because it was the best agricultural land. Anyway, but when Prabhupada was taking the bus ride from New York City to go visit Gita Nagari for the first time, that's where he gave the name Gita Nagari, and it stuck. But, you know, it wasn't an accident. He had a vision way back of Gita Nagari. Anyway, here you have an opportunity to honor a great person. We're honoring Jiva Goswami and following Jiva Goswami, Jiva Goswami following Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Pick the great person you want to honor and create a community that exemplifies the values held or taught by that great person. My thoughts go in that direction. For me to honor Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya and my spiritual master, create such a community or communities. That's a task. I mean, have one person become a pure devotee, which is what the teaching of Bhagavad Gita is. Sarvadharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam, just like that, right? So it's a major task. That's what life is for. It's for major tasks. And then everyone together collectively helping. And that's how Prabhupada spoke of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very kind. He has sent me so many of so many souls to assist me in this work. I'm very indebted to Bhakti Siddhanta and indebted to all of you, Prabhupada would say. So the values and of pure devotional service, and what does that mean? That's a nice phrase. What does it mean? And by exploring the teachings of Jiva Goswami and our great acharyas, we can have a clearer idea of what that is. Just like this Guru Tattva topic, Jiva Goswami nailed it, made it really clear what it is. What Guru means, what submission means, what mercy means, how to receive it, what you do with it once you receive it. All those things, they're so very clearly presented. You just have to receive it. You'll want it and then receive it. Okay. Any comments? Or? Yes. You want a Jivana? Yay! But it doesn't specify. One can know for certain there was some great saintly association. I mean, when this scene happens, Prahlad Maharaj came. So we can deduce there was some association. It wasn't just like granddaddy that he never saw. There was a relationship. I don't know the specifics though. At least I haven't heard it, read it. He was doing his duty. He was doing his duty. It's like Vritrasura. I mean, not exactly the same, but like Vritrasura. He became the enemy of Indra. Because that's what the mantra said. They simply, when he spoke to him, he wanted to do the will of the Supreme Lord. That was his inside. And the outside was whatever he did. He was the king of the dentists, doing his duty without attachment. Yes. Sure. Well, with each thing, there's many things being accomplished. That's the nature of the Supreme Lord. With one thing, many things are accomplished simultaneously. That's one. What's that? Not necessarily superseding all other ones. You don't do the college program. It's one of them.
We are three
3 paces of land. It's not a place of land. That's why he was chastised. You promised 3 paces of land. You broke your promise. You gave me your head. That's not a pace of land. You broke your promise. So you're going to be punished. Kings that break their promise are to be punished. Punish him. Does that answer your question? Yeah. I don't know if there's more than one Durvas Muni. I'm not giving you a yes or no answer. I know what you're asking. I'm letting you know I'm not giving you a yes or no answer. My answer is I don't know of any more than one Durvas Muni. If there is one, I don't know of one. Yep, he sure did. Yeah. Well, those are different Indras. Whether it's different Durvas Munis or not, I don't know. I don't have knowledge one way or the other. But there's different Indras. So Durvas Muni can be, you know, one of those who lives a long time, Chiranjiva person. But is that really what you're asking?
No, my question was the same Indras, or when the same Indras.
Different Indras.
Different
Indras.
So, my question is, Indra being mixed devotee, but deliberate personality, no matter what about the Shams,
oh, come on. This is a college question. Yes. He was able to take it as mercy. Who might that be? Well, here's the good news. You want some good news? Prabhupada said, and it's true, Krishna will never give you a test that you cannot pass. You could not endure what Bali Maharaj had to endure. Bhishma Dev said that to Yudhisthira. An ordinary human being could not endure what you and Queen Kunti had to endure. They're extraordinary. What Bali Maharaj had to endure, you could not endure. But you get tests that you can endure. That's the good news. And don't do a yeah but. But it seems like it's difficult sometimes. That's okay. You know, it looked difficult to them too. But, you know, Draupadi. But what did, you know, what did she, you know, initially she, with one hand she's holding her sar, the other hand she's reaching. And then she realized he's too strong. I can't. So, and commentary. It says, later, Draupadi said, Krishna, you didn't come. And she said, well, you know, you didn't call loud enough. You didn't call with your whole heart. You wanted to do it yourself. Well, when you called with your whole heart, I was there. So, something like that. It's not like push you to the edge of the cliff until you're like, hanging on the edge of the cliff and push you again and then catch you. It's not like Krishna's playing games or something. He wants to scare us, like, you know, the theme park or something like that. He recognizes, he's in our heart, he recognizes what's going on, the strength and the contamination, and what's needed to remove the contamination. When he's very kind, he'll, especially with his devotees, he'll do like that. Help. Challenge or deal, and then help. But we need to call out for him. It's nice. It's not nice. It's nice. So, you know, one thing you could think is just don't become an advanced devotee, because then you'll have to have greater ordeals. Just stay like, you know, a nice moderate devotee and take moderate ordeals. Let me tell you some of the ordeals. Count your blessings. Anything else? Yes. This is Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Not just Kunti, the Pandavas and Kunti, when Narada came to visit them in Hastinapur. That's not selfish. That's, in our case it may be, in her case it's not. It's out of love. There's a difference. That's a nice question. Would you like to venture a guess at the answer? Huh? It's real simple. The rule of thumb is service. What's on the other side, or what's on this side? Is it, I want to serve. That's the intimacy of love is the intimacy of service. And the other is selfish. You know, I'm at the center. And the other is the interest of the other. The intimacy of love is the intimacy of service. Generally, there's a mix until one is fully pure. But there's the distinction. He's being honored. Bali's being honored because he just wanted to serve. Whatever Vishnu wanted, you can take away everything. You can humiliate me. You can do with me whatever you like. That's not an ordinary person. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we're not there. For us, it's a mix. There's faith in the fact that association with an extraordinary person, a great devotee or the Lord or whatever, it's like, let's say, going on pilgrimage, going to the Holy Dham. We know what that means spiritually. But there's also, anyway, there's a mix. And when it's unmixed, then we actually enter the holy Dham, not just like going to catch the surface. Enter the holy Dham. And same, take the association of a big personality. It's the mood of service, pleasing them. I'll be benefited to the degree that I wish to be in service. And then here's another measure. Service on the one side and humility on the other. Because the other is pride. I'm special. And you're not special. I'm special. I mean, that's exaggeration, but, pride. And as opposed to humility. His name, I mean, you can, I did it today, put in Virochana as a folio word search. There's not a lot of hits on Virochana. And where there is, it's just mentioning that he's either the son of Prahlada or the father of Bhadra. That's about it. Bhadra's life not much is found. He was ruling, so in that sense, the role. But the detail is not described, nor for how long, and all those other nice questions that you probably are wondering about. I'm not holding back information I'm sharing with Pandita Sis. And more than that, I don't know. Yes? Well, Narottam Das Thakur speaks about everything has its place in Krishna consciousness. Everything, so anger, and everything. So, managing one dimension of managing might be, other than that which is for Krishna, you don't. So find something that's for Krishna and then do. So as far as pride is concerned, Prabhupada expressed, one can feel pride in the fact that I am Krishna's. No, it's not. That's not a worldly kind of pride. It's a transcendental pride. Find the channel for that. And then otherwise not. Or like anger. If a devotee is offended, anger. You know, not like unleashed an unbridled anger, but you know, there's a place for it. Like Hanuman, what he did after finding Sita, there's a place for it. There's a verse in the 11th canto that goes something like this. It's a very beautiful verse, so paraphrasing doesn't do it justice, but it goes something like this, where one recognizes the shelter of the personality of Godhead, the quality of one who has taken full shelter of the personality of Godhead. I recognize I have not, and therefore I act on material desire, and I regret that I act on material desire, and I pray for that opportunity to become free from material desire. It's not like, that's okay. It's not like beat myself up either. It's a regret, and you know, keep one's attention on what the real standard is, hoping for the descending mercy of Krishna to come to remove that. That's a spiritual managing of lower quality. Another is cultivate humility, like the antidote, something on the other side of the pan scale. After, I'd like to take a look and see if it's in that list from Bhishma Parva about you know, what's on the other side of the pan scale for pride. I can take a look and see if it's listed in the Bhagavatam. But cultivate humility. You know, an antidote is instead of feeling proud and that the nature of pride is pushing oneself forward, the antidote is push someone else forward in the mood of being in service to others so they can be put forward, at least cultivate like that. Just put something on the other side of the pan scale. It helps manage the problem. It doesn't like make it okay, it just helps to curb it, bridle it. Okay? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.